implications of COVID, including PPE and distancing and so on. You know, unlike the United States, we don't have a system where everybody can mail in ballots. We are very, very dependent on traditional forms of voting. But there is one concern, Chairperson, that I want to ask questions on, and I trust colleagues will cover the other areas, and that is this replacement of the zip-zip machines. Now, the zip-zip machines, anyone who knows the voting process, who has worked as a party agent, knows that they are essential to the smooth running of the election. They give a voter details, they help determine whether a person is eligible to vote in a particular area fairly quickly. And we also know that if those zip-zip machines are on the blink and things have to be done manually, that it slows down the voting process considerably, to the extent that it even has the potential to turn people away, because all of the IEC is so dependent on these zip-zip machines. So it has, if we don't have effective processing of our voter information facilitated by these machines, it could lead to inadvertent voter suppression. The concern, Chairperson, is that at this very late stage that the representative of the IEC told us a contract will be signed tomorrow, if I got it right. That is pretty late to replace the voter management system that we currently have. And so my questions are the following. If the contract's going to be signed tomorrow or sometime later this week, when will the new voter management devices then be delivered in terms of this contract? Is there only a single supplier? In other words, what kind of a risk to the delivery of these devices are there? When will the devices be delivered? Is there sufficient number of the devices to cover all of the voting districts in the country? And then lastly, I think that there was a plan afoot to replace these zip-zip machines in 2019 already, and that was abandoned. And at that stage, if memory serves, it was mentioned that the new voter management devices will be smart devices, and that they would enable the IEC to detect somebody who would want to vote twice. So double voting, fraudulent voting. Can we please have confirmation whether these devices that are now being procured to replace the zip-zip machines has that functionality? Then, Chairperson, my second set of questions goes to Dr. Naidu of COGTA. The presentation that we just had a moment ago, in particular the very interesting issue that he raised of a executive committee municipality perhaps being better suited to coalition government than an executive mayoral system. Now, in essence, under an executive committee system, different parties will have representation in the municipal cabinet, if you can call it that. And instead of the executive mayor, traditionally coming from the majority party, having the power to appoint a mayoral committee or the municipal cabinet, if I can again use that, the distribution of those seats are done proportionally. The interesting thing is that it is only KwaZulu-Natal, I think, that still has these EXCO, these collective executive committee municipalities in significant numbers. The rest of the country has largely opted for winner-takes-all executive mayoral type of systems. Dr. Naidu did mention that he is not speaking on behalf of COGTA and telling MECs for local government what to do, because in terms of Section 16 of the Systems Act, as I understand it, it's the provincial MEC or Minister of Local Government in that province that makes this determination, and Salga and so forth need to be consulted. So Dr. Naidu is not telling provinces what to do. He's just mentioning something interesting, and perhaps, starting a conversation. My question to Dr. Naidu is, given the experience in KwaZulu-Natal of these collective executive committee systems, do coalitions fare better in KZN where there is a collective executive committee system as opposed to an executive mayoral system? So is there in the field evidence that it works better? I don't know. I would really like his answer. Presumably it's something that he's looked at. And then a related question to Salga is, Mr. Joel, has Salga been consulted in any of these provinces about a possible change from an executive mayoral system to an executive collective system? Has any of those provinces signaled that a change of this nature is on the cards? Because presumably you'd have to do it, you can't just wake up one morning and decide to do it. Has any such discussions happened? And what is Selka's opinion on the matter of an executive mayoral versus an executive collective system? Thanks very much, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Brink. Can I allow Honorable Groenewald to be the one that asks questions as well? Honorable Groenewald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, pardon my video again. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Sure. I think Honorable Brink has covered my worries in terms of the new management system. Then just one question still left for Salga. We are already in a budget process in municipalities. Therefore, there will already be a new IDP and budget, can I say, adopted from council just before the elections. Therefore, there must be a comprehensive closeout report in each of the municipalities. Will they, can I say, assist the municipalities to compile such a report before elections and to, can I say, affiliate or can I say, to discuss that closeout report with the new council coming in? I just want to hear their answer on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Groenewald. Can I hand over to Honorable Geza? Honorable Geza.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. Greetings to Honorable members, my colleagues. Chair, I have just a few pointed questions. I even wrote them, Chair. So bear with me. There is a quote, I think it was Mashego Shiburi of the IEC that he says that in the context of local elections, it is not possible in the context of elections. He trusts that it is not possible for the voter to vote where they are not registered. So I'm saying that how could the IEC leave that to trust? What actions and direct actions that mitigate that situation, where a person is prevented, preventive measures, where a person is even prevented, because first of all, you check a person before you actually is allowed to vote in that particular voting station, so that there is no shortage of voters. Papers and so on. What preventive measures are they going to take this time to to mitigate that situation, because as it often has. The other questions, Chairs, relate to the
colleagues. Can you hear Honorable Chairs? Honorable Chairs?
I'm here, Chair. Honorable, can you hear me? Chair. Chairperson.
Yes, we hear him, Chair.
Can I continue, Chair?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. So the other issue that my colleague has raised which is a concern for this committee is the issue of the budget cut to the value of 35 million. And I want to ask the IEC, how prepared are they in terms of what they deemed to be progressive adjustments to this year's elections? Now that they have a budget cut to that amount. The other issue, Chair, I will come back to the questions that were raised by my ground forces here. I want to ask the IEC, they offer the South Africa the single registration weekend, which demonstrates to me the restraint and the restricted budget and incapability to offer much more time for voters who would have otherwise had a second chance to register due to work-related and access issues as it relates to farm workers. What happens if an individual visits a voting station to register to vote and later finds out that the presiding officer did not register her or him? Have you considered to give voters a receipt when they have visited the voting station to register to vote? I assume that in the previous your green ID book, you would have had a stamp that you attach. But in the current situation, where you have a smart ID card, how will you do it, IEC? What evidence will the voter have in hand to say that I registered in this voting station as a proof, so that we don't get a sabotage, a situation where you deliberately are neglected and are not registered to vote due to fear of losing the vote and so forth, and bias that is happening. We know it. It happens all the time. As long as I was a ground force, as long as I was a party agent, Chairperson. So the other question, Chair, relates to there's a situation that I encountered. I think it was Govan Legide. I want to ask the IEC, in the event, in the context of by-elections where a councillor has resigned or passed on, you use a 2016 ballot paper. But in terms of the current delimitation of wards, ward 30 voters belong to ward 1. Some of the ward 30 voters belong to ward 1. Even though they appear on the 2016 ballot paper, they are not allowed to vote according to these current delimitations. How do you allow a situation like that to obtain, IEC? And what action will you take going forward to rescue that situation? Because there's a general confusion in the community as to how do you get a councillor who resigned in a ward in 2016, and then you have voters that are still in that vote in that voter's role that are not allowed to then vote in the current situation in terms of the delimitation of, while you are using the 2016 voters' role. It does not make sense. Can you clarify it to us, please? The other issue relates to Elias Mutualeti, residents of Tabakubedu, Lekhwating, you know, who have to walk long distances in order to reach voting stations. This matter was raised with the IEC, but to date nothing has been done. What is the delay in seeing it to that this matter is attended to? The other question goes to the demarcation board. What delimitation in Elias Mutualeti local municipality, what 9 and what left is being? What delimitation in Elias Mutualeti local municipality, what 9 and what 11 is being divided by a boundary of a road and had an impact on participation of the voters? What action has both the demarcation board and SALGA taken to improve this situation emanating as a result? How the other question goes to SALGA. How will the awareness campaign reach farm dwellers, taking into consideration that access to farms is very limited, Chair? The farmers often, may I say white farmers, often fight with us in terms of access, just access to the voters. And in some instances, you get, in the case of Emakazeni local municipality, you get a farmer, may I say a white farmer, who does not allow the voters to come near their house and closes the access road and open a much more longer route for the route that goes through the forest, which is much more distant for the voters to access the voting station. Isn't this a recipe for discouraging the voters to access those voting stations? And what action have you taken to make the situation less complicated, as it were, IEC? And then I just want to ask in terms of the concept document of the EFF detailing how the 2021 municipal election could be consolidated to 2024, what responses have they given to because I'm quite curious as to what were the responses of the IEC. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Honorable Kaiser. Can I hand over to Honorable Spitz to ask your questions as well? Honorable Spitz, over to you.
Good evening, Chairperson.
Welcome back. Good to see you.
It's good to be back. Yes. Honorable Chairperson, I'll start with Mr. Naidu, the last presentation, because I think that's the topic that triggered my brains more than anything else. And I would like to say it is actually a discussion that we need to pursue maybe more intensely with regards to the executive collective system and the executive mayoral system. And I don't know, maybe Mr. Naidu is anticipating something that we don't want to anticipate, but I think it raises a very interesting topic that I think needs to be discussed, because looking at the current political landscape, it is something that needs to be considered seriously. I will leave it at that point because I would really like us to pursue that. My question is, first one on the IEC. In terms of the key innovations that has been presented to us, my colleagues have mentioned some of it, but my concern is the recruitment and training of the election staff. We have found that to be in most elections always to be a problem and a matter of concern. Now, if we are going to have new smart technology, one obviously wants to ensure that the staff working in these elections are all well prepared and they all know how these new technology is going to work. Now, with a 35 million rand cut in budget, it raises the concern as to whether these things actually will, materialize, working with a much smaller budget than usual. The other one, Chair, is the issue of voter education. With the cut in budget and also the new innovations being presented to us and a number of changes, I am concerned and I would like to know from the IEC whether there indeed will be voter education, because now voters will be exposed to new technologies and a number of things that are different from previous elections. To SALGA chairperson, I would like to know from them, in terms of capacitating new councillors or new political office bearers, I've listened to the induction manuals, the pre-election preparation. I want to understand in very simple terms, what are the fundamental differences with regards to these guidelines in comparison to guidelines that we have seen over years before and after elections? I would like to just know just 3 to 4 points on those fundamental changes that will, approach the capacitation of elector of public political office bearers differently. And I'm asking this, Chair, because I am really concentrating on the capacitation of new councillors, because we've seen that councillors need that desperately. So I need to understand it. Then in terms of the four municipalities that have been mentioned and the three in the Western Cape and the outstanding matters, I would like to know, is there any risk of the public participation process being shortcut in terms of these three municipalities? If so, that would be a huge concern to me. And I think also in a court of law, that's not going to stand. Thank you, Chairperson. That's all for me.
Thank you so much, Honorable Spies, for the questions. Can I now hand over to Honorable Mkalipi to have a share of work?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, can I be allowed not to switch off my video? I have reported to you earlier on that I'm on the road in the Eastern Cape. So my network is quite bad.
You don't get disconnected.
Proceed. Yes. Thanks very much, Chair. Mm. I must say that I have missed in some of the presentation, especially that was made by the chairperson of Demarcation Board, Ubabu Manyoni. And I think when I peruse the presentation that was sent to the committee, there's more information that is very interesting to engage on. But I trust that my colleagues will ask on my behalf in case I don't touch on what I was supposed to ask on behalf of my constituency as well as my political party. Chairperson, let me start to engage with the presentation from the IEC. One of my colleagues touched on the issue of ZipZip. And I think that Ubabu CEO Usai Mamabulu touched on it to say that it will be replaced by some certain device. But I think that we need to get a clarity, Chairperson, because I think I was also serving at Home Affairs previously, and I'm privy to the information that was shared to the committee by IEC in the Committee of Home Affairs in terms of updating for 2019 national elections. And the issue of ZipZip came strongly in that portfolio committee to say that I think it was IEC who was proactively saying that some of these machines, their life has been come to an end. So it's old and they need to be changed or something like that. But when I was struggling to follow the presentation, due to the network here in Eastern Cape, I heard him saying that no, they are going to replace the ZipZip machine in total. And I think Honorable Brink spoke to that particular aspect as well. But I want to ask specifically to the issue of ZipZip, because it was also we have some concerns generally in South Africa about the ZipZip. ZipZip, we thought before, because these things of elections is new to us. Remember, we're not included before 1994. So some of the things we learn as we go. We thought that this thing of ZipZip will be saying that no, Honorable Mtambi have voted in a particular VD somewhere in Polokwane. So now she's trying to come and vote secondly in another VD. Later, we found out that no, this ZipZip does not speak to those things. So that is the major concern, which is how is IEC now ready to address some of those concerns that were raised before, that other people, they've managed to vote twice. In 2019, Chairperson, we have a serious concern when there was this thing of putting an ink on the thumb, when it was all over in social media, to say that no, this thing can also be easily erased on your thumb, and it causes a lot of discomfort, and people were making noise to say that no, this election is not going to be free and fair, because people, they just can vote here and then rub this ink easily. They were also demonstrating they can use cheek, you can use this, but the fact of the matter is that you can't be able to vote twice. So I just want to get a more clarity on this issue of ZipZip to be replaced by this new device. Also, to stop this thing of being voting twice. A person can be able to vote twice in one particular day. That is the one thing. So now, Chairperson, I just want to get more clarity from IEC through CEO and all other colleagues who are here from the IEC. This thing of exactly when are we having local elections? Are we going to have it local elections this year? Their presentation talks about a window period starting from 4th August ending 1st of November 2020. And when you calculate, it's less than 8 months now, or it's 7 months to be precise. Are we going to have local elections within 7 months? I think one of the colleagues tried to also to touch on that aspect to say, also in your presentation, you speak about the credibility of elections. Now, if we are going to continue to have elections within 7 months from now, are we going to have a credible election because of COVID-19? We are still in level one. We are not supposed to go and call and campaign fully. Are we not going to just have elections for the sake of having elections? And I think Ufaita Gqeza tried to ask specifically questions in terms of our submission as the EFF. But I just want to put differently. IEC, if you are going to have elections, I know that you said on your presentation, the minister must determine the date and so forth and so forth. But I believe that you also talk to the minister, you also talk to the executive, you also provide some guidance, if I can put that way, although you don't take decision, to say that within 7 months, are we going to have proper elections? Is it fair? Is it fair for all political parties to go to elections because there is no campaigns that have been taking place? And when I was listening to the demarcation board as well, talking about their processes in this process of demarcation board, and also IEC in one of your pages, you also touched on the issue of on the key challenges by the IEC, saying that there is always the potential for some communities to remain aggrieved in such a way that elections get disturbed. So now I want to zoom in this thing of period of elections. Because even if the report of the demarcation board that is given to us here. I think the number, if I'm not mistaken, let me just peruse the chairperson. There are some, let me just peruse here. Sorry. There are some objections. I think in total is 1,465. And it says here by the demarcation board presentation, all objections were considered by the board, but we are not given the details. Even if they were considered by the board, as we are putting it yourself, and also the IEC, they are putting very correctly to say that it has a potential to cause social unrest when people are not satisfied about what the demarcation board have decided. So how are we going to avoid this? We don't want the situation that happened before. I think it was Khutong and in Wuhan, whereby people were up in arms, are grieving about the decision of the demarcation board. So now, if there are this kind of complaints, 1,464 objections, one also has to take into consideration that you also mentioned in your presentation, Babu Manyoni, to say that some of the areas we didn't, you couldn't go and do a consultation because of COVID-19. You have resolved to do virtually. You know, in this committee, Babu Manyoni, we have raised some concern about the demarcation board processes apart from COVID-19. We said to you, hey, we really don't know how to get hold of you guys. Even if I'm talking about a person, an ordinary person who wants to object, and a rural person for that matter, who wants to object to a new demarcation. So they don't know what to get you. And I remember very well, Chair, because they even said to us, one of the reasons why they are not accessible is because they don't have resources. So now things are getting worse after COVID-19 because all departments, their resources are being cut because of COVID-19. So now I'm asking my question. I remember Honorable Taba, Nchaba, even saying that no, the demarcation board must come clear and also elaborate, because in one of their presentations, they were putting Abokoka Badala, no Baba Badala, so they put some paper. But you know, they are happy, they've been consulted with. I'm just looking during the ordinary processes, not during COVID. So now if you have saying that no, I can't continue to do the consultation process because of COVID-19, let me do it virtually. Are you also reaching people from rural areas? They're one Nongoma to say your ward is going to be affected, so come and participate to through the virtual platform. I don't think so. And if both IEC and demarcation board, even the department, because at some point the department will also be affected, if they can be honest to say that some of the issues or some of the challenges that is going to come before or after elections is people will be complaining that, no, I have not been part of this process. And I want to also to check this thing of addresses. I think Honorable Kaza also touched on that one. If I'm not mistaken, Babu Sai Mabamul, this is a constitutional matter, the issue of addresses. And correctly so, Babu Kreza was asking a very correct question to say that how are you going to avoid a person coming from Inanda, Kota, Afune, Ugo, Vota in a particular ward, because a certain political party said, no, we're very weak here. So let me pass people. I think one of the court cases that also taking place was along those lines, that people are passed from one a place to another. As a result, there was a court case, and the court case took a decision to say that no addresses must be used. When I was listening to Babu Mamabulu before I just got disconnected, I don't think we have arrived in 100% to have all South African with addresses. So therefore, how are we going to avoid this situation before? And then the last one, Chairperson, that is I want to ask the IEC, as much as we don't know if elections are going to take place, but the likelihood, the 80% chances is that we are going to have elections this year. And I don't think any person from the minister, from the political party that is a ruling party in South Africa, they care about people who are saying, they don't know, we have not campaigned enough as other political parties. They are going to forge ahead with local government elections. So now IEC is in the center of everything in terms of local elections. There are challenges in terms of your offices. For instance, the Ingoza Hill municipality. The IEC offices are said to be in Flagstaff. People like Ulisiki Sigi, they don't have IEC offices. And some areas like Umbashe, only place that have IEC offices are at Idutwa. Places like Elliotdale and Willow Wave, they don't have offices. So I'm just making an example with Eastern Cape to say that in a particular town, there's only IEC offices, and in some of the towns, people are expected to take a transport that will cost them 200 rand to go to reach IEC offices and 200 rand coming back home. So this is the main example. I know it is a very similar case to other rural municipalities or rural areas. So I'm asking during this period when the likelihood is that you are still going to have a local government election. So it's part of your also as well of your program that you need to get as many as people to go and register in order to participate in local government elections. So if you have this situation whereby people are expected to spend 400 rand to go and register, surely with this rate of unemployment in the country, the rate of poverty in the country, no one will want to sacrifice for 400 rand in order for them to go and register to vote in local government elections. So therefore, I will think that IEC will have a program maybe saying that, no, we have to provide mobile vehicles to these areas in order for people to come and register. Because if you are going to stick to your own offices, which is far to the people, I'm not sure if you are going to make sure that everyone who is willing to go and exercise his or her rights is protected in this manner. So I would love to hear a clear program from the IEC how to address this situation. Honorable Brink touched on this one in terms of the preparedness for IEC. I wanted to ask as well during the voting day, because at some point you find that there is also some challenges regards to people are reporting that no, now the VD is in a particular individual, there's political colors in this VD. When you ask IEC, what happened? Why the VD is, you just get a response to say that, no, this is a crash. So it means that before the voting day, the IEC didn't do their work to go and check those voting stations. In other places, people are expected even not to reach there, they have to go through some streams and it's in the day. And when you go and question IEC, what happened? Why is this video so far from the people? Why are the people are expected to cross the river? You find that the fact of the matter, no, they didn't go and check prior to say these videos that were said that they are there, they are confirmed. So therefore, I just want to get the improvement from the IEC. Are all those challenges that were there in the past are addressed now in terms of saying that, no, we are 100% ready. The last thing, we know very well that is not the IEC problem, but it is the problem of ESCOM, is the problem of other departments, the issue of electricity. That's where the rigging is taking place. Even other people are just playing the rigging, saying that, no, at 8 p.m., we are going to switch off the electricity. And Utologutu ESCOM have not announced that there will be a load shading. But 8 o'clock, boom, no electricity. That's where things are happening. So those are the final things, details that we would like to know if IEC have. I know very well, Ugutu, one of the reasons what the IEC is going to say, but in terms of resources, you know, Mkalipi, you just said, Wena, yourself, Ugutu, e-budget has been cut to you. But now, we really have to know in order for us to have smooth elections in South Africa. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you so much, Honorable Kalipi. Can I allow Honorable Mpumza to ask his questions as well? Honorable Mpumza?
Thanks very much, Chairperson. I've been picked out, Chair. The network is problematic here. Yeah, I've lost some of the presentation. I've read the presentation. I was just present during when IEC was presenting.
Yes.
My first question, in welcoming perhaps the presentations and also commending the chair of the Demarcation Board for recognizing our Chief Whip and Honorable Mukaribi, Honorable Manyoni. Chair, in welcoming the presentation.
Who's the Chief Whip now?
Adam Galibi, let's proceed.
But it can't be a coup d'etat, Chair. Our Chief Whip is here. It can't be me.
No, you say
our IEC has made a presentation, Chair, and a very concise presentation from the IEC in showing the state of readiness for the coming local government elections 7 months down the line. Of interest, Chair, the IEC has actually also put up serious political challenges that they often encounter as running elections, particularly political tensions that become high, and perhaps they might be navigating towards a violent state. Whilst we would be now getting into, we have only run the fifth local government elections, which means that democracies are maturing. My first question, Chair, would be aligned with the other colleagues that have raised the particular questions, would be in relation to the state of readiness of our IEC, particularly making our people ready and deepening democracy and participation of our citizens in elections. I would like to understand to what extent is that IEC ready with voter voter education to ensure a maximum participation of all potential voters in South Africa to participate in the elections and turn around the situation where local government in the local government elections, reports in the previous elections are indicating that the participation of potential voters is not that maximum. This would relate to the fact that how then citizens in South Africa are alive with their civic duties to participate fully in the local government elections in deepening democracy. How ready is therefore IEC to ensure that in the event of the fact that they would be operating within a period in the context of the pandemic, COVID-19, as well as the constriction that had been fostered upon by the advent of this disease that had brought about apparently a contraction in the budget. Is the current budget that the IEC does have sizably enough to ensure that a vigorous voter education, to ensure that our citizens are geared and skilled to take part in this particular election, given that we have to use these e-gadgets related to this election? That would be my first question. The second one, they related to the fact that they are also where there are no addresses. They are providing a voting procedure, a valid voting procedure. Now, my question would be, given that I'd lost the presentation towards the end, what would be the sizable segment of those voters within the segment of the population that would have to be provided with this varied procedure of voting without proper addresses? And where, in which province is that particular population situated? That I've seen the figures, 6% in Switzerland, 7% whatever. But I had wanted to be sure where they said they will just appraise ourselves on our own. But my question would be, where is the significant population of those voters situated in these rural provinces? And secondly, how ready then is IEC with that varied procedure to ensure that voters would be provided, to ensure that in the end they would be participating in the elections come the determination of the date of those elections in this financial year? The other question, Chair, would be that particularly to the demarcation board. In the 2016 local government elections, a number of municipalities, because I understand that now, the demarcation board has been dealing with the delimitation of the inner boundaries, that is the internal walls in a municipality, not the outer boundaries. Now, I would like to understand how the board going forward would deal with the issue of the municipalities that have been demarcated, and those municipalities had become dysfunctional because the prognosis, I mean, the diagnostic reports that were actually provided had not informed the decision of determining those municipalities that their economies are collapsing and those municipalities are actually becoming dysfunctional. Now, my question is, how is the board going forward to deal with those municipalities that they are demanding that they be re-demarcated? What would be the future plan of the board in response to those municipalities that had been brought together and they have become so financially distressed arising from such a measure? Chair, we are also, the department was indicating that the presentation by the department, we would like to understand from Mr. Naidu. Sorry, Chair. Or perhaps before going to Naidu, I would like to perhaps to be briefed by the
be briefed by who, Honorable Mpumza? Honorable Mpumza? You are muted, Honorable Mpumza. Honorable Mpumza? Can you unmute your microphone? Failing which, I'll hand over to you, Honorable Jireko.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also acknowledge the presentation that has been made to us by all the presenters and entities. Chair, we all know that COVID has affected government budget hugely. Government department had to cut off its budget in order to accommodate this challenge of COVID. And IEC is not an exception to this. So how is the commission dealing with the issue of lack of funds for the voter registration weekends, which are not fully funded? And then secondly, Chair, I had a network problem, so I don't know if I have heard properly. I think on the presentation of IEC, they've indicated that in order to avoid the spread of COVID, the voters will be encouraged to bring their own pens. So I don't know if I've heard properly. But if that's the case, what are the implications of that situation? Because there will be a point where somebody will come to the voting station at his or her own time and it's only one or two people and they don't have pens. So how is the IEC going to deal with this if that's the situation? Do they have contingency plan as to what they will do in that situation whereby people will be going out to look for the pens and create unnecessary tension? But this one is if I've heard properly on the issue of the pens. And then the other one, Chair, also on IEC, is that in each and every election, there are challenges that the IEC come across. So what are those challenges that IEC usually come across them? And how are they going to resolve them? Also considering the fact that they will also have another challenge of COVID, which will have to be managed properly. And Chair, also on SALGA, now that the term of the councillors will come to an end, and we know that some of the municipalities are not paying the third parties, they take long to pay the third parties. And we also know that there were some challenges with some municipalities who were in some of the pension funds. So whereby some of the pension fund, they did not invest the money properly. So how is SALGA going to deal with this challenge? How does SALGA propose to deal with the issues of municipalities that deduct pension fund contribution from the employees and councillors that fail to pay contribution to the pension fund? So what is going to happen in the situation whereby the councillor is not going to come back and the municipality is owing the pension fund and the councillor needs to get their money back? So that is the questions that I have. And then on the government, there were some municipalities that were not happy about amalgamation process. And we know that now that we'll be approaching the elections, that issue will also come out. How are they going to address that situation of those municipalities that were not happy about the amalgamation? Because now that we'll be going to the elections, they may protest, they may start unnecessary riots in their own areas to show the government that they are not happy about the arrangement. Is there a plan that is in place in order to deal with that situation should it happen during the time of the election? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Direko. Can I hand over to Honorable Hadebe?
Thank you.
Honorable Hadebe?
Yes, no, thanks, Chairperson. I'm using a different device this afternoon, Chair, and my video function is malfunctioning. I think I'm going to follow along the same lines, Chair, of concerns in relation to challenges as highlighted, Chair, by the IEC. And starting with the fact that, Chair, we are used to having two voter registration weekends, which in itself created a hype and afforded an opportunity for political parties, independent candidates to market or bring to the fore the awareness in relation to the elections. And when we see a report that paints a picture of limited funding for voter registration weekend, Chair, it speaks to the voter turnout ultimately. And we have seen the figures as indicated by the IEC that there has been a huge decline in relation to a voter turnout, Chair. 2016, we were sitting at least there was 1% increase at 58%. But when you compare and contrast that with the national turnout, the last elections, there was a huge decline. Ultimately, that will also have a direct impact on local government election voter turnout. And that speaks to the legitimacy and acceptance of those that will be elected. If more people who are eligible to vote stay at home, others correctly so because the fear of the pandemic, and they wouldn't want to risk their lives. Those that have comorbidities they wouldn't want to take such a risk. It's been indicated that the pilot project for e-voting has been cancelled. With all these challenges, Chair, and with all these facts as highlighted by the IEC, I'm not advocating for elections not to take place, but given what we have in front of us, against all odds, is it advisable? I just want to get a sense and understanding, because the data that is consumed by us seeks to suggest that it is not advisable given the current circumstances, budget cuts from government, not having enough time for candidates and political parties to contest elections. We have seen also the growing number, Chair, of independent candidates. We have seen the growing number of new political parties, and now there's legislation in underway that there can be political parties that are regional and provincial, meaning there will be huge interest of political parties, but they will be confined in terms of participating in campaign that is free and fair. That will obviously raise issues of unnecessary disputes, number of losers, and that on its own will speak to what I've said earlier, the legitimacy and the acceptance of those that will be elected. So with all these challenges, is it advisable to forge ahead with the 2021 local government elections? We understand the prescript in terms of the constitution that we are, our backs are against the wall. There's nothing we can do. What are there avenues in place to ensure that at least we minimize all the challenges and we do what we can with what we are currently faced with to ensure that at least if we are forging ahead, we are convinced that there are mitigating factors in place and remedial actions to address all these challenges that are here. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you so much, Honorable Hadem, for the questions. Can I then also check with the department? We want to get an update as a committee on your consideration of the request by the Phokwane Local Municipality for the inclusion of the Bagamotsebe area into the Northern Cape. The other issue, should it be resolved that Section 20 of the Municipal Structures Act only takes effect during the 2026 local government election? What will be the implications for the four municipalities that have less than 10 councillors? And then how will the department address the possible difficulties around this? Then the other issue that one wants to get clarity on with regard to the, before that, to the department as well, maybe this one, DM Mapela will be able to talk to it. Has the minister already made a determination as to when elections are going to happen, given what the IEC has indicated to us that this needs to happen within a specific time? So we want to know whether the minister has already made also a determination. And then coming to the commission itself, then the issues around South Africans, citizens who are abroad, will the commission allow them to vote during this 2021 local government election? And then if so, how, given the cancellation of the e-voting pilot owing to lack of funding? The other issue that is very critical is just to add on what the other colleagues have raised with regard to the IEC as well. You know, we are in COVID-19 pandemic and the elections are supposed to take place as per all this presentation. And then I just want to hear from the IEC, what happens if the COVID-19 situation is out of control around the election time or towards the election time? What is the commission planning to do to that effect? Then follow up on the question that I've raised of South Africans going to vote, whether they will be allowed to vote who are outside the country. It's a follow-up one question that I also want to know. Actually, when is this country actually going to introduce e-voting? Are there plans to that effect? And then the other issue that is critical, I think the deputy chairperson of the commission, Commissioner Love, will deal with it. What is the commission's view on countermeasures, on also on fake news? Because this is the matter that I should think it needs to also to be addressed. So those were the issues from my side. Honorable Mpumza, are you back? Honorable Mpumza?
Yes, Chair, I'm back.
Yes, you can proceed.
Yeah, Chair, hey, network is battling me here very hard. Chair, the IEC has also, in its presentation, provided that there are political challenges in the run-up to local government elections that apparently create a very tense situation. And I remember that the SALGA has actually sponsored an investigation into councillor killings or assassinations, particularly in KZN, and also there was a commission that actually undertook that particular work. This question now is directed to SALGA as to, given that local government elections are coming 7 months down the line, what measures has the SALGA taken and lobbied for that would be looking at perhaps minimizing the councillor assassination, an experience that we have seen besetting the KZN province? What measures then are they putting forward to ensure that such situations, as indicated by the IEC, that some of the challenges are high political tensions when it comes to local governances, measures that would actually ensure that we preempt a situation that would actually see municipalities being now beset by a problem of tensions and councillor assassinations. And going forward, because that SALGA is responsible for the capacitating of municipalities and councillors, what is the criteria that SALGA is recommending going forward as a standard procedure, or perhaps the model of a particular public representative in the local government elections? That would be perhaps be a guideline as to political parties, the kind of candidates that would have to be fielded forward by political parties to be public representatives in the local government elections. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Can we allow Salda to be the first one to deal with questions as directed to them? Then they will be followed by the demarcation board, then the department, the IEC will be the last one. In that order, over to you, Salda. Salda? Councillor Stofile Lance, where are you?
MIA.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I was hoping Hello. That... there we are.
Yeah, Chair.
Yes, proceed, Councillor Stofile.
Thank you very much. I think I'll take few, and then Lance will take the bigger chunk because he's deeply involved on these matters. I think Salga has been doing some work pertaining to capacity building of councillors, because we understood that without capacity, there will be no significant change, transformation, and service delivery that will be rendered to communities. And that is why Salga, over a period of time, has invested significant time in capacitating councillors. And we even went as far as capacitating a councillor on the base of the role the councillor is playing. For instance, a speaker. There's a training tailor-made for a role of a speaker. What are the legal requirements of a speaker and how the speaker should conduct the business of council and how the speaker become a unifying figure in the council, for council to be a single entity that represent the interests and aspirations of the communities. The MMC finance training on the finance systems that are required of a councillor in a municipality, infrastructure, and many, you can name them. So we tailor-made the training on the basis of the role played by a councillor, but we've got a general leadership training of a councillor, and that is why we also instituted a training center and encouraged councillors to up their game in terms of capacity. And that is why over a period of time, many councillors have passed through to the institutions like VET University, the Forte, and many other institutions, so that they understand that they are in the business of governance, and therefore they must be readily available with the capacity that they can discharge the responsibilities that are attached to their responsibilities and so on. So Salga has paid a significant focus on the training. And that is why in our presentation we said we agreed with COCTA that rather than working in the pitching hole, having a pitching hole arrangement, let us put together our way of operation in capacitating generally councillors. And there is a very big jump that you will recognize at the tailor end of the next term of that collaborative effort that the Salga and COCTA have entered into. And if you listen to the presentation that Lance made in the operations administration, that they've agreed in terms of working together, holding one another, going into the future in training councillors. Insofar as the issue of the consultation about plenary or a type of system, it has been a challenge, to say the least. I think members of the committee will recall in numerous occasions where I interacted with the members of the committee, I always make this point that there is no serious commitment of consultation on many matters that affect local government, as required, as Dr. Naidu properly outlined in the presentation that he made, that there is requirement of consultation of the association in the sector. And over a period of time, over this last 4 years or so, it has never been a case, an interested view that is located elsewhere in the governance systems that we have in the country. But I think in our presentation we said, going to the next term of council, things had to be done differently. And that is why we applaud and appreciate, as NEC of SALGA, the work done by our officials and COGTA officials in terms of sharing notes, sharing views in terms of rendering service to the municipality as required. So basically, it has been not an easy path to freedom. It has been a very difficult, tedious process that we had to bob and weave so that we are able to assist the sector. It has been difficult. So insofar as consultation is, it's something that we only appreciate in the recent past period, that at least there are some consultation engagement between ourselves and the department on matters that affect local government. I think let me pause there. Lance will take many of the questions that have been posed. Thank you very much, sir.
Can I hand over to Lance?
Well, thank you very much, Chairperson. Also appreciating the questions that have been posed and directed to us. Perhaps the first one to deal with, indeed, as part of the pre-elections process, there will be guidance given to municipalities on the development of the handover the reports. So indeed, it will be covered as part of the pre-elections processes. As it relates to the capacity building program that the Council of Sofia has spoken to, there are indeed amendments that will be made to the material that was used in 2016. But what will inform amendments, Honourable Chair, is firstly where there have been legislative as well as regulatory changes that would influence what the prescripts are. But secondly, we are going to draw experiences from the audit outcomes of the last 3 years of this term. But also lastly, looking at what has been practical challenges that municipalities have experienced and draw on lessons from those particular experiences and package it as part of the materials. So we would want to remain in line with the legislative prescripts, but draw from practical experiences so that councillors can easily relate to what those experiences are. We are certainly aware, Honourable Chairperson, that about the third-party payments that are not being made by municipalities. But as it relates to pension funds, we have recently interacted with a particular pension fund, the Minister Councillors Pension Fund, to get a sense of what their processes are leading to the elections and what will follow as withdrawals from the fund so that we could be of assistance to them where possible. But also they have indicated to us that the standard practice that they have is to follow up with municipalities where payments, meaning contributions of councillors, have not been paid over. They have a standard practice that they follow to try and recover those monies. Where they are experiencing challenges, they have indeed drawn our attention to those areas and we continue to engage and assist them. But part of the guidance we would be giving to municipalities as well is to ensure that leading up to the elections, we do not fall into that trap where there are no contributions that are made and paid over to pension funds. We had a bad experience after the last elections where indeed there were councillors that suffered that blow, and they took individual actions against the respective municipalities. So we would want to avoid that this time around. On the security measures, while Chairperson, we continue to align ourselves with the authority given through the upper limits notice to where indeed there's a threat to the safety of councillors and their assets, family, that the necessary processes should be followed in line with the what the notice allows. But also because there is not much we can do about security outside of those upper limits measures, the interministerial committee that is tasked to look at preparations for the elections, there's also regular updates on security measures, and so there is a process within the interministerial committee that is looking at security-related matters. And then lastly, Honourable Chair, is what have we done to try and better skilled people to be candidates, but also what has been done to ensure that political parties themselves identify through their processes appropriately skilled individuals. There are a number of processes that are unfolding in that space. We are continuing to engage with relevant role players, and there are a number of proposals that we are making, not merely just looking at the criteria for candidates, but also looking at one is having individuals elected, the other is to ensure that where positions are available, such as mayors, speakers, etc., that appropriately skilled individuals are put into those positions to ensure that they are ultimately able to execute their responsibilities. So there's quite a bit of work happening in that space, and we are engaging with relevant role players. So, Chair, those are the responses to the questions directed to us. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Can we allow the Demarcation Board to be the next one to respond to the questions as raised? Over to you, Chairperson and CEO.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I've spoken to the Chair. He said I must lead in answering the questions. I'll be very short. Starting from the question by Honourable Teza about the accessibility of some voting districts around Ward 9 and 11 of Elias Mbalir. I don't have the details of the configuration of Ward 9 and 11 with me, but the way I understand the question is that the issue of voters accessing various VDs is not necessarily a matter that is easy to resolve by the MDB because it's a direct result of the application of the norm in each and every municipality. You might find that if the norm is 10,000 in this particular area, in this particular municipality, you find that the settlement patterns in another ward is so scattered such that you'll find that the voting districts might be very far from each other. Honorable Mukalipi raised an issue around people not knowing how to get the MDB. And I think Honorable Mukalipi is not raising this for the first time. From where we are sitting, when we look at the broader issue of public participation and the broader issue of face-to-face engagement, whether you are having all the relevant stakeholders or offices in various regions, let's take, for instance, IEC, they do have officials in almost all the municipalities in the country. But public participation will never be enough for everyone. We still find people saying they don't have access to some of the services that are offered. You also raised the issue of objections and whether they have been attended to by the MDB. Indeed, all the objections that have been received by the MDB, we can show for all the 1,465 how the MDB dealt with them within the framework of the norm. And our view has always been that whether you conduct public participation as much as you can, once you publish, there will be an individual that will not be happy about whatever you have configured. So as long as we are able to show that within the framework of the law, this is what we have done, then we are able to provide proof to all the people who are aggrieved. As we have indicated in the presentation, we showed you quite a number of municipalities where the chairperson is engaging. But there are those areas where they will tell you that we don't care about what the law provides, like the Sakisizwe one. They just said to the board member on the 29th of March now that, look, we don't care what the law provides and what you guys are telling us. What we want is that you have to have this ward retained as it is. And if people do not want to listen and it becomes very impossible, then we don't know what to do anymore except to indicate to them that the only option that you have is a litigation route. Honorable Mpumza, you raised the issue of how will the board deal with dysfunctional municipalities when the process of outer boundary determination starts. Firstly, we have communicated as the board that we will only deal with this issue of outer boundaries after the 2021 local government election. Now, the triggers, there are quite a number of triggers. One of the triggers is the board's own initiative. And secondly, it can be MECs or the minister through Section 22.2, and sometimes it could be an individual. Now, we have got the 12 factors of demarcation that are in Section 25, but all in all, we need to be creating a municipality that is defined in terms of Section 152.
Is there any reason why you're not showing your face? The chairman can do that. What about yourself?
I've been trying to show my face, maybe.
Yes, you do. There you come. Sure.
So the 12 factors we have categorized.
Go down a bit. You can't see your forehead. There you go.
We have categorized the 12 factors into four broad categories when we determine outer boundaries. Now, Honorable Mpumza, you're talking about issues of financial dysfunctionality. But broadly on the four, one is governance, and the second one is financial management. The third one is the special issues, and the fourth one is service delivery issues. Now, what informs the board to take its own initiative? We take from the capacity assessment report, and then we look at all other reports, and then the board can make its own initiative. If it is a matter that is triggered by Section 22.2, the board will need to look at whatever the minister and the MECs have presented as a trigger for those municipalities to be amalgamated. But more often than not, we realize that sometimes when you are looking at only one area of functionality like financial viability or financial management issues or financial functionality. You find that some of these municipalities are failing big on governance, and they are failing also big on service delivery. So it becomes impossible for the MDB to say, we are going to be sorting out financial management, and only to find that you sort out financial management, a municipality get a clean audit, but there is no service delivery. Or the municipality is spatially correctly located, but there is a variety of fights among the offices of the speaker, the chief whip, as well as the mayor and the MM. So those are the few things that one could say, Chairperson, on the question by Honorable Umza. I think those were the questions that were raised that had a relation with the MDB. Thank you, Chair. I think that maybe the Chairperson would want to conclude.
Chairperson, is there anything you want to add?
No, thanks, Chairperson. I will not add, Chairperson, because I think the CEO has covered the areas.
But I was praising you, now we can't see you. What's going on,
Chairperson. Chairperson.
Yes.
I'm still in the safe place. I'm still in the office.
Oh, I wanted to know that, Chairperson, that whether you're still in the safe place, Chair.
No, thanks, Chairperson. But Chairperson, the CEO has covered the areas that have been raised, except, of course, I must indicate to the Honorable Mukhalipil, so that we all are in this together, Chairperson, because the COVID-19, obviously, it's not of our own making, and it will be proper for all of us to assist wherever necessary, particularly to those who are referred to as public reps, and some with obviously constituency offices and so forth, on some of the issues that member communities might want assistance from. But the CEO has covered all the questions, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairman of the Demarcation Board. Deputy Minister Wapela, you want to respond to the issues, then you leave the technical questions to the bureaucrats. That's what I think you're going to do now. Proceed.
Thank you, Chairperson. Exactly, I'll do that. Now, let me start with Honorable Diregos' issue around whether we have plans for the municipalities that were not happy with the amalgamation that took place, and whether when those protests happens, we'll be ready, and what are the plans. Obviously, the political engagements with political parties and community structures will continue to guide at the level of the provinces and those areas, and where there are national matters, will then also come in at the national level to find a solution through engagements. And we have to find this particular solution, as has been the model. However, once obviously there is a collapse and people protest but it's peacefully, obviously those guidelines are there. However, once the protest goes violent, there's a collapse and there's an anarchy, it's only when the security then becomes in as a last resort really to avert further deterioration of the collapse and so forth. So we hope we will not reach that particular set point. We'll be able to engage with those particular parties, as is the case. Probably some situations and some arguments might have changed over a period of the past 5 years. And let's see then what emerges as still issues that are still complex, difficult, and as South Africans, we really have to engage with them. So I still hope, therefore, that the system of engaging will still work and so forth. We know about the issues of Vuane, Mandamulele might still rise where there are people who say we are still not happy. And also Matatiele, they might also come. And with Matatiele, there are also national issues that were entered to, agreements engaged, and we hope those issues will also be resolved through engagements. On Ingamutibi, the Northwestern and the Northern Cape had long agreed that Ingamutibi will then go to the Northern Cape. However, there's new evidence and new information that has arisen that when they then begin to when the movement and the signing was to happen, there are new evidence that has emerged to say some people have said, no, we are misled. We don't want to go to Northern Cape. We have to go and re-listen to that particular environment and then see what really what the people want. But already there was an agreement. I'm not sure whether listening to those who say they no longer want to go there. Because at the time when the agreement was reached, almost everybody was saying, yes, we're going to the Northern Cape. But the situation seems to be changing and turning around. We'll also listen to Ramu TV as to Pokwan. I think I'll leave to the department and to indicate if there's any new information. And Chair, without obviously claiming that we'll be answering you adequately, we will then have to revisit these particular areas and bring a response around Ramu TV in a very holistic way and also Pokwan. But unless there's other evidence and information that the officials have, they can just add up now, but still bring the matter back to you. And the issue of the determination of when the elections are going to happen, Chair, the minister has been thoroughly and fully engaged by the IEC and then other bodies. And then obviously the minister is still engaging upwards to really, as the constitution dictates, to further engage upwards, but also as she engages upwards, she also has to engage on an issue of the COVID-19 as to whether indeed third wave is on its way, where will the country be, the issue of the vaccination, whether it will be, but otherwise conclusively the engagements are there. And at the rightful point, the minister having engaged, and he will then come back and then indicate to the portfolio, to the nation as to when the elections are going to be held. But quite scenarios have been already engaged, and I think there's an idea that is emerged, but obviously those further engagements will then make the minister to come back. So let's wait for that process to unfold, and then the minister will come at the right time to the portfolio committee and to the nation as to when is the date of the elections. I'll just stop there for now, Chairperson, thanks.
Yes. Can we then allow the bureaucrats to deal with the technical questions? Dr. Naidu, I see your mic is leaking. Over to you, Dr. Naidu.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Do you want to see
where
my...
are you? Yes, where are you? I want to see you. Okay, proceed.
I'm safe in my office, Honorable Chief.
You are safe in your office. That's good.
Yeah. So just a couple of things to fill in the gaps from Honorable the Deputy Minister. So to respond to the matter raised by Honorable Brink around the collective executive system, and I think it's important to note, Chair, that the slides were in relation to the coalitions that we were faced post-2016 and some of the utterances made by political commentators, constitutional experts around the collective executive system. Now, that should be, you know, seen in the light of the comments also made by the IEC, highlighted by Honorable Adeba, in relation to the growing number of political parties from 79 in 2000 to 200 now in 2016, the number of candidates increasing from 30,000 to 63,000 in the last local government elections. So statistically speaking, the chances of more coalitions come 2021 post those elections, it could lead to more coalitions. And taking from what the commentators have said, that perhaps the collective executive system could be something that could be more workable. Whether it's a panacea for this type of situation that we would face, I don't know. So linked to that, Honorable Spitz, commented that, we should pursue a discussion vigorously in this regard. I would personally support that, but I would think such a conversation would not be complete without the provinces being in the room. Because when you have regard to Section 11 of the Structures Act, the determination of the type of municipality, lies strictly with the MEC for local government in the province. And, the guidance, as was indicated in the original Structures Act, was struck down by the Constitution. The matter around Pokwana, and I think to some extent Deputy Minister Bapela has covered it by virtue of mentioning the Bakamotibi area, being transferred from Northwest into Pokwana in the Northern Cape. But Honorable Chair, it is important to note that this is a provincial boundary matter, pretty much like Matatiele. And it is not the sole responsibility of the department to deal with this matter. So the Department of Constitution and of Justice and Constitutional Development also plays a very significant role in this matter, mostly because the provincial boundaries are provided for in Schedule 1 to the Constitution, and a change or an alteration of a provincial boundary would require an amendment to Schedule 1. And by virtue of that, it is the Department of Justice that would lead the charge or the process of amending the Constitution to give effect to a change in the alteration of the boundaries. Of course, then the department would come and play the supporting role in that regard, develop relevant legislation to give detail to the transfer, dealing with the transfer of assets, liabilities, etc. So that's the kind of dual role that the two departments play, along with the municipalities that are affected coming into the play, as well as the affected provinces. Honorable Chair, you raised the issue of also the proposal by the Demarcation Board on the taking of effect in 2026 of the changes in the number of councillors for these three municipalities. Firstly, let me say that, that is an executive decision that the minister would need to take. But, when one looks at the bedrock or the pillars that informed the changes to the Structures Act. And let me take a step or two back, Honorable Chair. So in 2014, 2015, 2016, we got the provinces, got SALGA together, and we said, colleagues, so anything and everything that are giving challenges to municipalities, let's put it on the table. So everything that you would see in the Structures Act amendments, Honorable Chair and members, has its genesis in those very early discussions that we've had. And one of the things back then we said was, so let's also deepen democracy. And by doing so, let's keep the minimum number of councillors in a municipality of 15, which would then translate to at least 8 wards in a municipality and thereby deepening democracy. But as I've indicated in previous discussions, that 15 was debated in the portfolio committee in the last administration, and the 15 was revised downwards to 10. So for me, it being, you know, one of the pillars informing the amendments to the Structures Act would need to be considered as this matter is finalized. So let's look at those three municipalities individually. And let's look at Kannaland, for example. So Kannaland has 14,735 registered voters as of the 18th of March. You input it into the formula that the minister published. It would give you 9 councillors in terms of the present formula. So in my view, that number of councillors for Kannaland can, in the period that we are presently, can be taken to 10, because 9, the ABC in the province can deviate by 3, and it could go to 10 or it could go to 12. So at least for that municipality, that change can be effected right now. But obviously, I would want you to verify that, you know, with the legal experts in that regard. So perhaps just to close out the first point around the collective executive, and Honorable Brink posed a very specific question in that, so, you know, what is the department's assessment of the collective executive, does it work, et cetera. And the response would be that we have not undertaken any specific study in this regard. But Honorable Chair, fortunately for virtual meetings, we have the liberty of consulting a little further. So I called a friend in the province, and the specific response was that the matter around collective executive has served KZN very, very well. That was the response that I got about an hour ago. So yes, we have not undertaken any study as to the success of it, but the province has indicated that it served them very well, and that in the 54 municipalities in KZN, it is just Moyo Mpofana and one other municipality that has the plenary time, and the other 52 of the collective executives. And of the 52, there are 3 municipalities that are presently under Section 139, which are Escort, Kabakolisi, and Mtubatuba. But that is the response to the specific matter raised by Honorable Brink, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Commissioner Love, can you be the first one to deal with those strategic questions? Then we'll allow the CEO and the deputy CEOs to deal with the other questions that raised, because I think there was a specific question also directed to Deputy Commissioner Shibuli. Over to you, Deputy Chairperson of the Commission.
Thanks very much, Honourable Chairperson, and thanks to all the Honourable Members. Yes, I think there are a number of things that the CEO and the 2 Deputy CEOs will deal with, but I wanted first of all to deal with the one question that you directed specifically to me, and that's looking at countermeasures that the Commission has considered and is going to pursue in relation to disinformation. And I think that in the presentation of the CEO, he did mention that we are looking at, we have already begun to put into place a reporting tool to enable those kinds of situations to be dealt with. And secondly, also to enable some verification of accurate information that is coming from parties themselves. It's work that we started in the 2019 elections, and we certainly will be increasing our focus on this. And should the committee want further detailed information, I think we can then, and yourself, Chairperson, I think we can then supply that to you separately. I think the second point that I wanted just to touch on is something that was raised by a number of the honourable members and touches on a point that finally I think Honourable Khadebe mentioned about legitimacy. And it relates also, of course, to issues about, the constraints that as a country we all face because of budget and so on and so forth. I think the important thing about legitimacy, Honourable Chairperson and members, is that it is true that we are, as you are, concerned that we need to make sure that we have as a great a participation as possible. And Deputy CEO Shiburi and possibly other colleagues who are in the team will begin to touch on the programs that we already have in place for outreach and for voter education and so on. And again, in terms of details, some of that can be provided to the honourable members as you would like to have whatever level of detail in a written form. But the point I wanted to touch on is that, you know, legitimacy of having an election that is not able to involve, as in 2019 and even in 2016, every single eligible voter. That, of course, is something that we're concerned about. But to not have an election can also create huge problems for legitimacy of those who are currently holding elected positions. And that's, of course, the balance that the Constitution tries to strike and, of course, honourable members themselves will try to strike. It's not something, as has already been said, that the Electoral Commission, as the Commission, can make a call on, because it is very much enshrined in our Constitution and in our law. And then the last point that I wanted simply to touch on is that, you know, in all of the measures and the new innovations and the developments that were reported on by the CEO as points of progress, I think we're very conscious as an institution that our electoral cycle, I think the honourable members will be aware, is something that we see as a two-year cycle. So we have elections every 2.5 years. And really, for us, the preparations for any election is something that we don't commence just within the period before an election. So the idea that we would introduce something new and immediately discontinue the old is something that I think just generally is not something that the Commission does. It really is a process, whether it's the ZipZip machine, whether it's issues to do with e-voting. And again, Honourable Chairperson, the issues around that probably would require a separate kind of a note or briefing to yourselves, but it's not something that we would do to create discontinuity, but rather to create some kind of progression to ensure that we phase out an old as we phase in a new. And I think that that's really the general remarks that I would make to this. And I think then I'll hand over to the deputy CEO, Mr. Shiburi, who will deal with the question that was asked to him directly. But I think we'll also probably be able to cover most of the other issues that have been raised by the honourable members. So, if with your permission, Chairperson, if I could hand over to the Deputy CEO, Mr. Shiburi. Thank you.
Deputy CEO.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair, and my apologies to be confronted by this wrong face at this time of the night. I have, Chair, clustered the responses into themes. That way we will save time on the response without losing the essence of the questions asked by the honourable members. In this regard, there are about seven themes that the questions have traversed, and with your permission, I hope to deal with it as follows. The first theme related to the postponement of elections. In this regard, we offer the following, and we basically reinstating the obvious, and those details are contained in the presentation made by the Chief Electoral Office. The first is that the Constitution places a ceiling on a term of municipal council, and that term is 5 years. Similarly, the Structures Act places a ceiling on the term of a municipal council, again, that is 5 years. The Constitution further dictates that an election must be held within 90 days of the expiry of that term. This requires that the IEC must stand ready to administer elections at the earliest possible date whenever they are lawfully called. The authority, as you all know, to call and set a date for an election vests with the executive. It doesn't rest with the electoral commission. And in our view, there are no constitutional mechanisms to allow for an election beyond the 90 days. The only avenue that we think is available is for an amendment to the Constitution. And because amending the date of an election impacts on one of the key foundational principles in the Constitution, i.e. the principle of regular election, we think that that notional possibility to amend the Constitution would in any case require a supermajority for it to be passed. On this understanding, Chair, the posture of the Commission is that it must stand ready to deliver free and fair elections whenever they are called, in any case, not beyond the 1st of November 2021. But if somehow a mechanism were to be found to lawfully postpone the day of an election, the Electoral Commission will then fall into line with those plans as and when they are announced. But not to prepare and stand ready at the earliest opportunity to deliver elections will amount to constitutional dereliction of duty on the part of the Electoral Commission. The subsect to this theme was a question was asked, what will happen in the event that the trajectory of COVID-19 is such that it is out of control? Again, there we think that the law does not impose an obligation on a constitutional entity to perform in circumstances of impossibility. In that event, we think that there might be an opportunity to approach the court for equitable and just relief. But before we can even do that, there's a number of hurdles that we must first overcome. First, we must be able to demonstrate to the court that we've considered all possible alternatives, that we've done everything in our power to adjust our plans to take into consideration less drastic measures than postponing the election. And in spite of our best planning, those plans are inadequate to guarantee free and fair elections. The second theme, Chair, related to ZipZip, the new technology, and e-voting. We have indicated that we will this week finalize the contracting following a robust procurement process. And then that contracting will iron out the details of the production schedule as well as the delivery dates of the new technology. The plan is to deploy the new technology for the general registration weekend ahead of these elections, and that will be preceded by a rigorous training on the part of all staff that we will be deploying for the registration drive. As it relates to the new technology, it differs from the ZipZip in the following respects. One, it is an online mechanism that serves a number of business imperatives. The first one, it administers the registration of voters. It ensures when we interact with the voter and we register them that there is a nexus between the address provided by a voter or a description of an ordinary place of residence with the ward in which the voter applies for registration. It enables us in real time to validate the ID number provided by the voter against the national population register before, so that we can clarify that the person is a South African citizen, they have attained the age of majority and therefore entitled to participate in elections. On voting day, the new device will afford us an opportunity to maintain a live voter's roll in a majority of cases in order to update the database to indicate voters who have participated in that election, so that even in the context of national and provincial elections, if a voter were to vote at one station and later present themselves at another voting station, the device will be able to indicate that the voter has participated in that election. The last issue in this theme was the questions related to e-voting. On its part, the Electoral Commission had sponsored an amendment in the Electoral Laws Amendment Bill that would have enabled it a lawful mechanism to pilot e-voting. This provision has been removed from the bill during the parliamentary process, and there is no authorized manner in terms of the law as it stands for us to pilot e-voting. We are, however, seized with the investigations, studies, and comparing notes with other jurisdictions where they have implemented e-voting. We are seized with the responsibility. We have not stopped, and we hope to resuscitate the discussion yet again. The third category of themes dealt with voter education in the context of COVID and in the context of declining resources available to the national fiscus. In this area, we have indicated that we have made a number of adjustments, the first of which is to scale down on the in-person contact for the delivery of voter education. We are the first, however, to accept that in certain social settings or certain social milieus, the need for in-contact voter education cannot be dispensed with. For that reason, we're maintaining capacity to do just that. However, we are increasing our footprint as it relates to digital platform. So the digital presence is consistent with our focus on targeting young persons as first-time voters and for registration. So we'll be increasing our digital presence to target younger persons. We, however, also retain some of the traditional methods that we've used hitherto, i.e. radio and television, because from the research that you've conducted, radio still remains the preferred platform for the majority of South African citizens to receive their information. So those platforms are still maintained. We will have also a school democracy week in which we target kids in secondary schools for registration and for dissemination of information to enthuse them enough to want to participate in affairs of their community. The fourth area relates to staffing and training. Again, here we are introducing digital means for recruitment to serve a dual purpose. The first is the exceeding need to limit physical interaction in order not to further spread the coronavirus. Secondly, we will use this online mechanism as a platform to recruit and also as a platform to assess applicants' affinity for technology. Because if we want to recruit people who can interact with our new technology, we must have a way of empirically testing their affinity for use of technology. The next theme related to voters without addresses. And again, in the presentation, we indicated that there is a residual 1.2 million voters who are registered, but for whom the Electoral Commission still does not have an address. The view of the Commission is that these countrymen and women are entitled to vote because they are citizens. But in order to safeguard the outcome of those elections against passing or whatever term members would want to use, those category of persons will vote via a varied voting method. In other words, on voting day, they will have to provide their addresses first before they are allowed to vote. If they do not have an address, they will have to give a description of the place of ordinary residence. And if that place locates within the ward in which they wish to participate, those persons will receive all the ballots that they are entitled. The next theme dealt with public health measures that we put in preparation for this election. Again, let's preface it as follows. A psychological possibility has been created that an election, a free and fair election, can be contested in the context of COVID-19. We know that South Korea, the USA, had huge voter turnouts, even in the context of COVID-19. We know that on the continent, Malawi held an election, Namibia held an election, Israel had an election, and in France, they held a local government election early on in the onset of the pandemic. So psychological possibilities, with adjustment, of course, exist that an election can still be held within a pandemic, and those elections can still be classified as free and fair. We have had occasion to test our public health measures in the November and December by-elections in 2020. We have yet two other opportunities in April and in May by-elections to further refine our public health measures so that by-election events or national election events do not become super spreader events. And then in this regard, let me clarify a few issues that arose out of the questions. The first related to voters providing their own pens. The Electoral Commission will make provision for pens at every voting station. However, to procure voters added peace of mind, a voter who prefers to use their own pen may provide their pen, but pens will be provided and sanitized regularly at the voting station. We will maintain sanitizing stations at the entrance and exit to the voting station. We will enforce the wearing of masks within the boundaries of a voting station. Similarly, we will enforce social distancing in the boundaries and in the queues at the voting stations. We will persist with the innovation that we introduced in the November and December by-elections, i.e. of using a different ink applicator to mark the thumb of a voter. In other words, instead of using an indelible ink pen, which is applied on multiple voters, we will use a single-use applicator to dispense ink on the thumb of a voter to indicate that the voter has voted. We are under no illusion that this is going to be an easy task, but with the involvement and participation of all electoral stakeholders, including voters, we think this is not this task is not insurmountable for the South African public. The last category of the last theme dealt with concerns and, in some instances, accusations of bias or people being able to vote more times than they were entitled to, or ineptitude on the part of the Electoral Commission. Here we wish to reinforce the following. In the context of local government elections, a voter can only register and vote in a ward linked to their place of ordinary residence, because there is, in local government elections, there is no equivalent for Section 24A, which is applicable in national and provincial elections. Section 24A allows a voter to vote in a voting station in which they are not registered with certain safeguards. So in local government election, a voter has only one opportunity. If the voter finds themselves outside of their voting district on election day, that voter unfortunately forfeits their right to participate in those elections. Similarly, going forward for national and provincial elections, we have limited the scope of Section 24A. In other words, Section 24A will not be available as a matter of course. It will only be available with pre-notification to the Electoral Commission, so that the voter's name is removed from their home voting station and it is updated in another voting station where they have indicated that they will vote, to eliminate the perceptions which are unfounded that voters are able to vote more times than they're entitled to. A question was raised also about why, because we've concluded delimitation, can a person not stand in a ward in which the new delimitation set locates them? We're maintaining two delimitation sets in the build-up to election. And for all by-election, the delimitation set that will be used to conduct those by-elections is the delimitation set linked to the mother election. And the mother election here is the 2016 LGE local government election. So all by-elections that we are going to fill in this year will still use the delimitation sets, the ward boundaries and the VD boundaries as they existed in 2016. The newly delimited wards and voting districts will take effect only on the day of the general election of municipal councils sometime later this year. The last point we wish to make is that we maintain political party liaison committees in all municipalities across the country, in all the 9 provinces, and also nationally. And the local PLCs are better placed as the platform to deal with the choice of voting station, location of voting station, delimitation of VD boundaries, and we do so with the active participation and involvement of political parties that are represented in those municipal councils. So I would implore honorable members that for those specific issues that they have in certain localities, those issues should be raised with their representatives in those municipalities for effective remediation at that local level. With your permission, Chair, the CEO and DCO Mosri are with us, and I would wish for them to sweep in the event that I've left out a question that they deem important. Thank you very much.
Can the Deputy CEO Mosri be the one that starts first if there are matters that have been left unattended? Then it will be the CEO himself. Over to you, Deputy CEO Mosri.
Good evening, Chairperson, and to all the honourable participants of this meeting. Chairperson, for us to save time, we are satisfied with the presentation of Mr. Shibori. Safe to say, Chair, that in the delivery of the elections, we collaborate with a number of state departments and state institutions to ensure that the election is smooth, and secondly, to ensure that there is a peaceful environment for the elections to take place. And where there are matters compromising the stability and the security of the elections, we do have a very good collaboration. That is besides our own conflict management program that we have in place, but in its nature, it is preventative. It is work that we do before there is serious tension and conflict, and before there are even political killings. The broad impact of COVID-19 has also touched on our budget, and consequently the limitations coming from that have been clearly outlined by the CEO, including the fact that we have one registration we can blend as a measure to meet the financial resources available, as well as still ensure that we do have a fair election process. With that, Chairperson, I would say thank you very much.
Chair? Chairperson,
CEO, you can proceed.
Okay, no, Chair. I think. Yes, thanks, Chair. Sitting in the dark, Chair, I am satisfied that the issues have been addressed in terms of the questions that were put. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Colleagues, look at the time now. It's 26 minutes to midnight. We are still going to engage with the commission, but moving forward on a regular basis. But I can allow colleagues who want to follow up on the matters for now that are urgent. Can I see a show of hands? Honorable Mkalipi, that's the end I'm seeing now.
No, Chair, thanks very much. And also accept your guidance. But Chair, please let us have another follow-up with the IEC alone on the matters of importance like this one, because some of the issues that you raised here are not answered, and I understand why. Maybe they just focus on the update on elections, because we ask questions such as the proper planning for on the day of elections. Remember, the CEO is sitting on the dark because of a load shedding. I did ask specifically about that, what is the plan of the IEC going forward. But I do understand, Chair, that it's becoming late, and we still have to engage the institution going forward. Thanks, Chair.
I'm in the same predicament like the CEO as well. I should think this is a matter that is ongoing, that will continue to engage with the commission and the department. I see it, Honorable Tezas, the end is up as well.
Yes, sir. If I may, please. I don't find it quite comfortable, and it does not occur well that we are not certain as to what preventive measures will take place to mitigate this pandemic during. We're not quite satisfied to those details. Not to mention that when we ask questions, we were told that the details are not available. I don't know, because the presentation itself provides details that we should peruse as members of this committee, and we do peruse them and generate questions. And when we ask questions, it really frustrates when honourable presenters come here and not bring about those details, because the questions do not belong to us. They belong to our people on the ground. The other thing that the IEC didn't satisfy is the fact that I asked a question, a very simple question. It might sound very stupid, but it belongs to our people. Our people are asking a simple question pertaining to during those the blue cards, the blue book IDs, there were stamps that were put there to as evidence that says that this particular person has indeed registered in this voting station. Given the fact that we have cards now, we're smart cards, what action has the IEC taken now to ensure that there's availability of perhaps receipts that will be given to those people? Because if our people go in there and find someone who does not register them and find that later when they come to vote, those things are things that happen. You can't say they are unfounded when we're on the ground every day in by elections, and then you come and say they are unfounded. They are founded by us. The issue of Govenberg is the issue. I was there. We were there on the ground. We picked up that issue. Remember that, Chairperson, we do oversight as well. So we find these issues and come and raise them here. So it can't be deemed as unfounded. We can't come here. We're on record. We can't come and speak unfounded issues here. So I was not. I don't think that these elections are ready to obtain, and I don't think that there's enough capacity, even given the examples that were given in places like France and so forth. This is not France. We're still using the systems that are very, very basic systems here and physical, and we're asking a question as to how is it that is going to obtain that particular issue when given the pandemic. So I don't think that we are going to propose that the elections be reviewed in light of the prevailing circumstances. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Reza, for that. But I think, CEO, you can quickly attend to the issue of the IDs. The rest, like I said, we are still, these meetings are ongoing. I think we're 7 months away from this supposedly to be gazetted election date. So then you should be able to deal with that as CEO on the issue of IDs quickly. If we can do that, then we will. There was an issue around the ID that that Honorable Kreza feels is not adequately addressed. If we can deal with that, the rest are matters that are going, like we'll keep on arranging this so that you come and continuously update us on the progress that you're making. Over to you, CEO, or any other person who can deal with the issue of the ID.
Chair, thanks a lot. the issue is as follows. We are in a transitional phase. We are transiting from the use of the ZipZip to the use of the new voter management device. Now, one of the reasons that the ZipZip is being, the use of the ZipZip is jettisoned is precisely because of its outdated technology and the fact that we're now using smart cards and so on. Now, the new voter management device will try to rationalize the business process of registration, which will include giving a confirmation by way of an SMS as well as an email if a person has an email account, which will happen at the point of interaction with the voter. So that will be the proof that the person has made an application for registration as a voter in terms of the new equipment that we've spoken about. So that will be the proof that we provide email and SMS. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. I still think we should end this meeting here. We'll communicate with you as proposed by Honorable Mukalipi to that we continue to actually meet with you, and then maybe at some point you'll be able to come and share with us your plan. Once it's finalized and finally, but there are matters like we had the deputy minister that day, because I think your hands are also held tight, because the minister must determine also the date for the elections. So that will assist a great deal. So as Honorable Bapela, the deputy minister, has said that the minister has been consulting on the determination of the date. I should think then that will come soon. But even if elections are to be postponed, but there's a particular year that period that they need to be postponed to, they won't be then be postponed to maybe for those that are saying we must have election once, it won't work, because this is a legislated matter that is a constitutional provision in terms of section 159 that determines the term of office of council. But then I should think that we are still going to meet, because this matter is ongoing. Also, COPTA, you should be able to come and brief us what is happening in those interministerial committees. You should have noted that we have raised the issue of funding, the question of e-voting, when is the country going to be raised? That's not only the matter that the IEC can be able to address. We also need also a joint portfolio committee with the department in which the IEC reports, the Home Affairs Portfolio Committee, so that then also on those electoral reforms, amendment bills that you're talking about, also then can be taken on board. So it's a matter that we cannot exhaust overnight, but we'll make sure that as we plan, we'll also inform you on time, because we are also interested to know, because if you hear the question, also to understand from the various provinces, what kind of the support is the IEC getting from the provincial government, in particular, then the reports of the provincial electoral officers become very critical for us to do our oversight work, because there will be issues of, like now I was talking off record with Dr. Dau, the head of the National Disaster Management Center, to say some of us where we are staying, some of the communities are cut off because of those rain that they've taken away the bridges, all those sort of things in terms of the election infrastructure. These are some of the matters that I think we need to deal with. But I should think, as I said, it's an ongoing. We'll make sure that we schedule you, if need be, every second month, if not every month, you come and brief us on the progress on this matter in relation to our state of readiness. I want to thank you, Deputy Commissioner, Deputy Chairperson of the IEC. Also, thank you, Chairperson of the MD, the Municipal Demarcation Board, Thank you, Deputy Minister and the DECOG team and my esteemed colleagues for this robustness. Thank you, Councillor Stofile and Lance and the other colleagues that have been part of this meeting. We'll still engage on these matters. Let's end it here for tonight till we meet again. Thank you so much. Good night.
Thank you, Chair.
Good night.
Thank you, Chair. Good night, Chair.